ask if you could stay for just 5 more minutes as we finish this show, so that I could talk to you about religion in the time of coronavirus, as we enter the sacred week, month of April, with Holy Week, with Passover, with Ramadan coming up, and what spirituality means at a time like this. We've been speaking with Bishop Clifton Daniel, Dean of the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced by a remarkable group of people. Most are working from home to protect against community spread. Incredibly dedicated. I am in awe of my colleagues every day. Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood, Trina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, Adriano Contreras, Maria Tarasena. Special thanks to Julie Crosby and Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, KBOO will be sticking to our regularly scheduled programming as much as possible, but there are some limitations that we are working with, so we appreciate your understanding and support. We are committed to keeping our staff, volunteers, and programmers safe and healthy, so we are transitioning to producing programs remotely. For updates on KBOO's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, visit our website at kboo.fm/COVID-19.
The time is 8 a.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for more talk radio. Here are your hosts, Cecil and Celeste.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm fine. I didn't sleep well as I usually do. You know, I think I had things are being done remotely, and I can't get my hands on them jitters, you know, because I got a couple of other things I'm working on. So I imagine that was part of my issue. But other than that, I'm fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. I've had some weird dreams, but maybe that's par for the course.
Yeah, mine too. I dreamt in my family, and I were living in a family compound, and some of my friends, and we were trying to figure out if we had earned enough money to retire.
Oh, okay.
That was hilarious. I thought, retirement in the age of COVID-19, what does that look like?
Exactly. You worked all your life, and now you're ready to retire. How?
Indeed. So I'm hoping that our listeners are doing well and keeping engaged and staying healthy and finding some way to, despite physical distancing, to thrive. I know it's hard on a lot of us. I remember when I was younger and a nursing student, and I worked in newborn ICU, and I worked in maternal and newborn care, and we had learned the power of touch, and we found out how important it was to the human being to be touched and to touch and hug. And I believe right now the common knowledge is, or the common narrative is, whether it's actual, whether the knowledge is more in depth or not, is that at least 8 hugs a day is what it takes for us to remain healthy. Because hugs do stimulate our immune system.
Okay.
So with that in mind, you know, I think, okay, cool. We can't hug each other, and this is the time when our immune system really needs to be strengthened. And what do? You know, and the reason we can't hug each other is because we're supposed to be doing this thing called physical distancing, which allows us to minimize and mitigate the spread of this virus. So, you know, we're all trying to, well, I won't say we all, but many of us are trying to be diligent. And many of us are trying to make this work for us. And it's an interesting phenomena because you see fewer people when you are out. And I'm seeing more and more people wearing masks. And I'm hearing that more and more people who actually have come down with the virus are being quarantined. And so I was curious as to how people are making it with this quarantine thing, because it's both a positive for reducing the spread of any disease, but it's also a challenge because many people don't believe they need to they don't need to invest in it. They don't need to do it. They don't need to comply. They don't need to stay, as Sam Jackson said, stay the freak at home. So,
right.
And so, you know.
I trust that many of our listeners are staying the effing home. And but apparently some people are not. You shared with me an article of you know, some people who just had to get outside at a skating park here in Southeast Portland.
Oh, that's not all. I mean, there are other stories that I've been following in various places. I think one of them was in the Atlantic, where it was about roommates, you know, living in the age of the coronavirus with roommates that you met on Craigslist, and how some people have just recently engaged in new living arrangements, but their compatriots don't want to, like, you know, follow the rules. And so one of the stories was about a woman who had three housemates, and two of them were all eager to comply with her thoughts of let's keep ourselves safe and isolate and stay inside. And one didn't. One decided that, well, you know, I'm not going to stop living because of this virus. And so this person was still going out and engaging in social activities and what have you. And what was amazing to me is everybody else felt held hostage, and they didn't know what to do. And I'm thinking to myself, see, this is when I need the Lord to touch me so I can get my attitude right, because my first thing would have been, well, you know, yeah, I can't put you out, but I'm going to lock up all my stuff that I'm using, and I'm going to wash off everything you touch. And if you get sick, I sure hope you be all right, because, see, I'm not going to take care of you, because, see, I'm not going to stop living. I thought, okay, Felicia, it's kind of a cold-blooded assessment of the situation. Are you really going to run it down like that? And I thought, well, I have to pray so I would act better, because I'm not sure, you know. But, I mean, what do we do when we are engaged with people who don't want to take these protective measures? You know, regardless of what you want to believe about the origins or the virulence of this virus, the fact is you should be at least taking it as seriously as you do the flu, at least. And more people so far have killed the flu, so you should be concerned. Because now you got the triple threat. You got cold season, flu season, and COVID season. So my question is, how do we engage our folks into taking this seriously about trying to prevent the spread? And I'm gonna share with my listeners a real story that I shared with you, and the names have changed because I love these people. But I got some acquaintances. Well, no, they're not acquaintances. This is family. One of the people has the virus. Young person, and it's important that you note that this is a teenager, because teenagers make poor choices, and they make sense to them because they're not fully developed yet. And so this person has developed COVID-19, and therefore the house was on quarantine because all the family members developed it. And right. You've got the young person not knowing that they're contagious, not knowing that they've been infected, not knowing that they're contagious, and not knowing that quarantine really means stay in the house. And so mm-hmm. they slip out because they get cabin fever. Other members of the household slip out because they got cabin fever. And then you got one member in the house thinking, what do I do? Do I call in on my family because they should be staying home and not running the risk of infecting others? And then you got the young people that I sent you the article on who are outside and either don't know or don't want to know that they shouldn't be congregating together in the skate park. How do we convince our family, you know, of this? And what is our social obligation? Is our social obligation to the people we love, who we know may have limited understanding due to life experiences or challenges or what have you, of how serious this is? I mean, we haven't had quarantine since, what was it, 1914, the Spanish flu?
1918.
Okay. Oh, I should remember that. That was the year my father was born. So this generation, for the most part, hadn't had to deal with anything calamitous. I mean, even as far as the last big plague we had, which was HIV and AIDS, that's still been a generation ago for many people. So yeah. There's not a lot of understanding of what a quarantine means, what flattening the curve means, what just because you're not in the high-risk demographic doesn't mean that you're not at risk. And so you've got people out here who don't know how to take this seriously. How do you keep them safe and keep them locked up with without feeling as though you are either the new narc squad, you know, reporting on your friends and neighbors and calling them in and jeopardizing your family structure? Or, you know, do you narc them out so that you can kind of keep the rest of society safe? And there's concerns about how this new physical distancing shelter in place
paradigm. Let's ask our audience to share their thoughts about this. How are we living in this social distancing era, and how do we communicate with our friends, neighbors, and family? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call. Mike will answer your call. He will let us know when you are there, and we will put you on the air. This is KBOO. More Talk Radio with I am Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey, and good morning.
Go ahead.
So Celeste. I was going to say, you know, we're trying to figure out how to keep everybody safe without people feeling like we've either turned into a police state because we're locked down, or we've turned into a police state because we're telling on each other. Because if you notice in that article, toward the end, it says if you see people violating, you know, the physical distancing protocol, call the police. And so, yeah. You know, it's a reality that we're called to look for the community good instead of our most intimate unit. Social unit good. And so I'm wondering how that's affecting people, how they're dealing with it, how they're convincing people, and then just their thoughts about how we can maintain the type of social cohesion that's needed if we are having to, well, knock on each other.
Okay. Those are a few thoughts that we have tossed out, and we know that you are aware and you have thoughts about these issues. So as you are practicing safe social,
safe social, I like that.
From one another.
Safe social.
What are some things that you are doing to first to talk with your neighbors and your friends and those who are closest to you, and how do you maintain your social connection with one another in this period of social distancing? Our number is 503-231-8187, and give us a call and let us know your thoughts this morning. You're listening to KBOO More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste, and we're talking about guess what? But also about how you can be impacted, how you are impacted by this. You shared a story about the young people in your circle, Celeste, and you know, I think for all of us, we are impacted by this pandemic differently. And for me, at least, it has been sort of for several weeks, it has been a countdown as I've watched the wave move over, you know, to different communities and different nations, and knowing that at some point in time we will all be impacted personally by it. And it became very real for me this past week when a friend of mine, first, because of the era we're living in, communicated through social media, and she posted a video about how she had been in hospital and how she was released, and she was just wanting all of us to know, all of her friends, that this is something serious, that COVID-19 is no joke. And a few days ago, she was placed on the ventilators, and she lost her life yesterday.
Oh, wow.
So April 5th was the day that COVID-19 became personal for me, in the fact that it impacted my immediate circle. And we all will be impacted in some way. We may know of people who are ill, and hopefully most people who catch the virus will survive and recover. But how do we interact, and how are things changing in our realities? And how do we maintain those social distance and social connections among all of us? One thing I think I shared with you, Celeste, that I've had the possibility, since I'm sort of like caught in at home for many weeks, that I finally decided that, you know, it's a good time for me to pick up Tolstoy's War and Peace.
Yeah,
lots of
I was
time
impressed.
For that. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. You know, Netflix can only last for so long.
Well, I'm not going to mention any streaming names and give them any more
advertising.
Okay. But no. I've suckered for a lot of those 30-day free trials. So I've got a grip of them, but I've also been reading and, you know, trying to piece together a working Windows computer so I can actually do some work, because the one I've got, for some reason, it keeps crashing on me, and it's really frustrating. Yeah. Can't do anything. So I'm learning to work a little bit, not on the deep guts of computers, but, well, yeah, I take that back. I had to learn how to unpin to get past a certain BIOS protocol, so I guess I am learning a little bit more, turning my geekdom, my nerddom, into something productive. But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, when you share that and developing your geekdom-ness, Also, that you know, all of us are a reality. You know, one of the things that we hear these days about social distance and how people should work from home, and we are more and more aware of that's a reality that's not a possibility for many people. I think one thing it has revealed is certainly a class difference and how it impacts our communities.
Yes.
And those who have the privilege to first work and work from home, as opposed to those who are either have to work in the public, or those who are, you know, we hear a lot about how we should honor emergency workers and those in the medical fields, but also those who are there serving and serving meals and cleaning the facilities. Those are people who are don't have much of a choice but have to be engaged with the public in many ways, and often ways in which just by being there they are at risk. So for all those who are either driving people around or working in markets or cleaning bedpans, and you know, we're aware of what you're doing and the work that you're doing, and I hope that our society will at some point realize the importance of all individuals, and that we can form a social network, but more importantly, to address the dilemmas we have in our society by economic and inequality that plays out in many ways and as this pandemic continues.
Cecil and Celeste, we have a caller on the line. Can I put Brian through?
Yes, please do.
All right, go ahead,
good
Brian.
Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Good morning.
Celeste, I wanted to commend you on one of the first things you said. You said physical distance, and personally, I do not understand this social distancing idea. We are not trying to social distance. We're trying to physical distance. By social distancing, we're going to lose connections. Physical distancing is what we need to do, unfortunately. But I think that's a really important clarification. I really appreciate you saying physical distance, and I'm just not getting the social distance term, and I think it's another example of how we often drop the ball in language. And I just wanted to point out to people that there's an excellent show on another station called On the Media. No, actually, I think it's on this station. Anyway, On the Media, they did one about the language of pandemic, and it was really, really great show. And they talked about the war analogy and how it just doesn't fit. Of course, it's useful for those in power because that gets people riled up when you talk about war. For whatever reason, our country really responds to war. But they were talking about how it's not a good analogy. It doesn't really work. You can't negotiate with a pandemic. You can't do anything. So many of the things associated with warring people, it doesn't fit for a pandemic. And they talked about the concept of, like some people were saying, when you get the pandemic schools you, it tutors you, it teaches you what you need to do. For example, there are other analogies that are more apt. So I think it's really important that we think through how the pandemic is being the language around pandemic, how we can be manipulated through that. And I think the war thing is stupid, but there's also something I wanted to mention was the idea of the timeline. About paying attention to how things happen. Already we're being lied to about when things happen and who knew and things like that. And even Fauci, the other day I heard him talking on an interview with a New Yorker, and he was talking about the timeline. And I was looking at my wife, and we're going, we knew about it before then. What? Mm-hmm. I know we did. And then I realized, you know, in this epidemic, I mean, all this is going on, you can kind of lose track of when things happen, and they can start lying to you about who knew what when. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is look online for a great tutorial on making a face mask out of a T-shirt. I can't remember the details, but it's really very cool and effective.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for your call. You don't have to leave just yet. You know, the reason I've been saying physical distancing for a while is because it hit me. Now, having been a nurse in practice years ago, I recognize that it's the physical distance that makes a difference. You know, if you look at a sneeze blast zone, it'll scare you from ever wanting to talk to people at all, you know. and it's a scary thought. And so that makes you understand how to be a little bit more precise about your language. But I agree with you. For me, this whole language structure around this this virus, I mean, I don't doubt that it's real. I've taken care of a friend who has it. I've brought food to folks, and so I've listened to the stories and what she described going through it. And so, and this is a young person, a teenager. So, you know, I understand that there's that is real. But my problem is, I'm like you. I'm a little suspicious of the language. And I'm looking at the language and I'm remembering articles, you know, like Animal Farm and like Brave New World. And I'm saying, I don't like the way this is being framed. I don't like the structure. And so it makes me a little suspicious, even though I'm trying to comply with what I know are basic medical protocols for, you know, protecting yourself. So I'm with you on that. But I don't know what else to do except just take good care of myself and try to encourage people to stay alert, read, but take good, you know, care of each other.
Yeah, and you know, it's a funny thing to me. Long ago, I was told about the concept of the precautionary principle, and it's very simple. It means if like you got two choices, go with the one that's most cautious. And
yeah.
And I constantly hear on the news and from the quote leaders and other people, you know, well, we don't know yet. So, you know, and I'm thinking, well, okay, we don't know yet. Why don't you go with the most cautious option?
Yeah.
It just baffles me that we don't, as a society, do that. It just seems to make so much sense, and that makes me feel like a kind of like, I don't know, my brain must be broken or something. There must be something I'm not getting. But anyway, just the precautionary principle. And also check out on the media their episode about the language around, I can't remember the name of it exactly, but the language around, I think that the episode is called War, What Is It Good For? That's what it's called. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's really great dive into language in times like this. So thanks again. Remember physical distancing, but we want to stay together socially, right?
Indeed. And, you know, go ahead and get a mask. It is not going to hurt anything. I know that it won't, it doesn't prevent the transmission. It slows the transmission. So
yeah,
that's
once again,
another reason why we use
them. Do whatever you can. And if you can't get one, this thing about making it out of the T-shirt is brilliant. A guy shows the whole process of how he does it on a table in his backyard, and he shows how you make a double layer of T-shirt out of it, and then in between those layers you put a piece of paper towel, which actually has a pretty good micron combined with the two layers of T-shirt. So it's pretty brilliant, and do it yourself.
All righty. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
And you are listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio, with Celeste, and I am Cecil, on number 0503-231-8187. And today is Monday, the 6th of April, 2020. We're speaking about how to maintain social connection in an era when we are forced to separate from one another. How do we maintain social cohesion? How do we maintain a way in which to live together while we're living apart? Again, our numbers are 50.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, even deeper than that, how do we address the fact that we are living with people who may not be compliant? And how do we address the fact that technically we're supposed to knock them out, both for the health of themselves and the health of others, you know, but maintain those social connections too, you know. So what are those phone numbers, Cecil?
503-231-8187. Those are the numbers, 503-231-8187. Give us a call, and you will have the opportunity to share your wisdom with all. I also want to refer people to a opinion piece in today's New York Times by Frank Bruni. Its title has "Anyone Found Trump's Soul?" Anyone? And it talks about how the president has failed to rise to the challenge of this pandemic, and that, in the words, he's shriveling into nothingness. And those of us, well, those of us who much watched the now daily briefing, which the president seems to think can be measured by their effectiveness because they are huge rating success, we see before our eyes how the president continued to fail to live up to this moment. In the article, Frank Bruni talks about how he refers to President George W. Bush speaking after September 11th, President Obama news conference after the killing of the children at Newtown, Connecticut, and how the president fails to grasp not only the magnitude of this pandemic, but the terror that the world faced, and how he repeatedly fails to rise to the occasion. Certainly, we are not seeking a messianic figure, but we are seeking someone who at least understands what we are experiencing. And Frank Bruni concludes his article by saying, "While I'm not looking to Trump for any panacea, is it too much to ask for some sign that the dying has made an impression on him, that the crying has penetrated his carapace, passe, and that he's thinking about something other than his ratings? I watch, I wait, I suspect I'll be doing that forever."
Cecil and Celeste, we have a caller on the line. Can I put Camilo through?
Yes. Good morning, Camilo. Thank you, Michael.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you doing?
It's really gratifying to be with you again and to be with your listeners. I'm doing very well, and I wanted to just offer some reflections. You know, you're concerned about response and response under a range of circumstances. And I think it's those particular circumstances that you find yourself in when you encounter the pandemic that really determines a lot about how you will manage to deal with this. So just referring to myself, I'm middle class. I am living in a house. I have income. I'm used to being alone because I'm single, and I have learned how to live like that satisfactorily. So for me, this is really no different from how I usually live, except for not being able to meet with people in person and to go to cultural events. But a lot of those things are able to be managed, like through Facebook. I'm a member of many different small groups and larger groups, and we're meeting by Facebook. And in some respects, Facebook meetings are actually better than in-person meetings. They're much more focused. You can listen carefully. One person speaks at a time, and you can understand what they're trying to say and get clarification and have real meaningful conversations and excellent communication. And I've done that several times with different groups that I participate in. The other thing is for us to realize that this is not an equal opportunity pandemic. It's going to impact people depending upon what their circumstances already are, like whether or not they have a house, whether or not they have an income when they can't go to work. And
yeah,
it's important that we recognize these differences and not think that the situation is not going to emphasize the kinds of the differences that already exist. And that's the most important thing, I think, that we need to look at this with, is the fact that this is an occasion where a lot of things are going to be revealed. A lot of things are going to be much more clear. You were speaking about language, and the language is not going to be able to disguise how the outcome of events is. And what we're not sure about is what those outcomes will be, because we just don't know. Even the data we have is suspicious, on which we try to draw conclusions. But realize that this is an opportunity. It will pass, and the opportunity we have is to recognize what this has revealed and change it. And we have to be prepared for that. And I just want to recommend something to everyone. It's an article by Charles, or an essay by Charles Eisenstein, called The Coronation. It discusses all of these issues about what the meaning of this pandemic is and could be in the future. And I hope that people look at it, read it, think about it, share it, talk with people about it, and just be prepared for making some real changes.
Well, thank you for the information.
Repeat again the name of the article and the author.
The author is Charles Eisenstein.
Yes.
And the title of the author is The Coronation. And he has a website. Just go to Charles Eisenstein and you can get it.
Excellent.
But, you know, thank you for the information. But since I got you here, one of the things I want to do is kind of focus on, you know, the actual topic, which is we have all got somebody in our midst, in one shape or another, who are not compliant. And how do we deal with them? I mean, we've been told in our news articles, you know, by the governor, the mayor, you know, we're supposed to be in place, and if people are not in place, let somebody in authority know. And how do you do that when you're dealing with people who may not
clearly
have a full choice?
This is not a matter that you can settle by force. And that's one of the things that the article discusses, is that the people in government are going to try to use this as an occasion to implement more stringent kinds of measures, surveillance, enforcement. And that's not going to work. That's very clear. But, you know, they're going to take an advantage of the opportunity to do that. That's the shock doctrine.
And so having read this article, what would be your takeaway or your give to, I guess, our listeners with how do we do that soft persuasion to help people be compliant, and so that we don't turn into a police state where we're reporting on each other?
I think that's an excellent illustration that you offer. It clearly, again, this is another case where it depends on what the existing conditions are. If you have the kinds of relationships where you have understanding, you have the ability to share with your loved ones and people in your family what is important and to have their respect, then it's only through communication, through education, through knowledge, and through respect. And, you know, if somebody doesn't respect those things, then, you know, that's something that this pandemic has revealed that needs to be addressed however you can, through a relationship. And I mean, I personally have had not the experience of being exposed to someone who's not following it, but to be exposed to the kind of attitudes of disrespect and think about how do you respond to that. And you can't respond to these things directly and expect that it's going to have an impact. You have to honor your self-respect and just give people some room and hope that you'll have an occasion to provide a lesson.
Okay. Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. From what I've experienced is that it is all about relationship, and you know the relationship is what gives you the leverage. But I'm hoping that in this time where we are both physically distancing ourselves, we're using language to distance ourselves, we're wearing masks to each other, and we cannot offer touch as a mitigating force of social cohesion and love and affection. You know, I hope that we can still maintain that emotional leverage and that emotional cohesion with each other. You know, I'm concerned, but yeah, I'm hearing you, and I'll have to check out this article, The Carnation.
Well, I think you can do it, even if it's digitally or if it's just by sitting 6 feet apart and having a conversation that way.
Yeah, yeah, with a mask on, because remember, in a sneeze zone, that blast goes further than 6 feet.
It will make it 12 feet.
I'm just saying. Okay, but thank you. I mean, you raised some very good points to help us figure out how to mitigate what could be a serious attack on social and familial even cohesion.
Yeah, we have to be prepared for this and take this opportunity seriously and really work at creating the change. We now have an opportunity, a better opportunity to make.
Indeed. Well, thank you for your call, Camilla.
Okay.
You know, as the two of you were speaking, it occurred to me that oftentimes in crises, we speak as if we will be different after the crisis.
Yes.
And we can think of times, either personal or more communal, that we've experienced things and say, okay, how will we be different? And sometimes we revert back to behavior, either because they're familiar or because that's the way it's always been and it's very comfortable. We like to think that things will be different, that we will perhaps think of our social relations in different ways, that we will begin to examine our social and political structure. For example, you know, just a few weeks ago, people were talking about how ridiculous and how difficult it would be to do Medicare for all, that no one would accept that. It's interesting now as people are losing their jobs and their health insurance and the health hospitals are being overwhelmed, perhaps we will rethink these things. So how will things be different when we get to the other side? And when will we get to the other side? That's something I'm curious about in terms of how will this crisis or this era that we in end? I don't imagine that like one day, I don't know, I can't imagine that one day, you know, doctors will say, okay, on June 31st, I said that particularly, June 31st, right, or on a particular day that we can all, you know, be social with one another, be physically close to one another. How does it happen? I'm curious. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let me refer you again to an article that Camilo referred to. It's The Coronation by Charles Eisenstein, which addresses this issue. Something you might do when you put down that book that you have been reading all week long. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Celeste, you seem to be busy doing many, many things right now.
Well, I'm kind of multitasking. I was pulling up a couple of articles on the computer and then looking at some notes. And okay, you busted me brewing a cup of tea. What can I say? Drinking a little nettle tea. But you know, I was looking at some articles that I didn't send to you, which is one that was like, how do you deal with the whole roommate experience when you've got somebody who is not compliant, you know, with the stay at home or protect yourself or social / physical distancing. Paradigm.
Out the door.
Huh?
Goodbye, well, roommate. Out the door.
You can't kick them out because they live there too. Oh. They're paying rent.
Well,
and you know, and then also
every
how.
Time's called to...
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Lock
I'm
them in your room. I'm sorry.
Lock them in the room? Okay. Yeah, that is one thing that conjures up horrible thoughts, though, of what to do with the various utensils and other items that they'll need to be locked in their room. Like, who's going to take care of that? You know.
Okay. Okay.
For those of you who think, what in the world are you talking about, Celeste? Let me just say this. In my early years when I was in nursing school, one of the things that all of the healthcare folks providers had gallows humors about was trying to empty radioactive urine bags, okay? Well, we had patients with radioactive implants, and whoever drew the straw sometime was the one who had to go do it, you know?
Yeah.
I see the look on your face is like, really? Yeah, I mean, that's the cold, hard fact, you know?
Radioactive.
But, you know, if a person had a radioactive implant, what do you think was coming out of them? You know, it's what we would tell people, like, yeah, for real, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just to get back to it, has anybody had any experience with trying to convince a loved one or a roommate or someone that you're connected to with trying to maintain the shelter in place? Or if they are actually quarantined, like my young adoptive family member, trying to convince them to stay in the house as opposed to just wholesale calling the police on them, you know. How do you navigate that in real terms? Now, we've heard some advice from callers who have said, here are some references, here's some information on how you might base this exchange on, but has anybody out there actually had to deal with it? And give us a call at 503-231-8187 and tell you how successful or unsuccessful you have been. I mean,
well,
I imagine
related,
the parents of those kids weren't happy.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Related to that, a lot of people I know who are trying to explain this with their children, and a cousin of mine posted on social media their daughter standing on their porch looking at their neighbor and trying to play with their neighbor, you know, at 20 feet away. And how do you explain to your preschool child that they can no longer play with their friends? What does that do, you know, to the development of young children, and how do we participate in their social development when they are separated physically from their friends? And so, while I certainly agree, maintaining physical distance is so necessary, that the fact is that for many of us, physical distancing is social distancing, and how do we maintain that cohesion, that connection, and how do we work with our children? How do we explain things to our children? And what will happen with our children at the end of this? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And share with us your thoughts, your solutions, your hopes, which we need in these times.
Cecil and Celeste, we have Harry on the line. Can I put Harry on?
Yes.
Please.
Good morning, Harry. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Oh, greetings, everyone, and thank you for taking my call. I got a call from my daughter yesterday, and she lives in Port Angeles, Washington. And she wanted to come down and introduce me to her new boyfriend. And, of course, I had to tell her, well, you know, it is social distancing. And, I mean, well, you know, physical distancing, like you were mentioning. And and you're crossing state lines. And so I kind of had explained to you, you have to stay at home. I know she's a caretaker, and what's happened up there was... all her clients have decided to, they didn't want her to come by anymore because of this virus, you know. So they've had other family members take care of them and everything. So she's kind of bored, and she wanted to come down to visit. It's maybe a four-hour drive, you know. But I had to explain to her, it's the same thing there. Here is everything is closed. What are you going to do, you know? Even though she was born in Portland, she wanted to show Portland to her boyfriend, but everything is closed. What are you going to do? Yeah. You know, I had to explain that to her, that, you know, and I think she finally accepted it, that it can't happen.
Wow.
So
go
ahead, Cecil.
How old is your daughter, and how did she respond to your denial of her request to, I really want to introduce my father to my boyfriend?
Yeah. Well, first of all, my daughter's 25. I'm 60, I'm over 60, and I have diabetes too. So it's like, well, I mean, I'm in the risk. So she finally accepted that. But, you know, it's been pretty rough weekend for me, because I have an aunt in Massachusetts who died Saturday of the coronavirus. And she was 98 in a nursing home. I have a brother who's in the Navy and is in Japan, and his superior officer came down with the virus. So he's under quarantine for 14 days. So hopefully he won't get it. He says he has some symptoms. I don't know if he's coming down with a cold or what, but I'm sure he's going to be quarantined for 14 days. I'm sure they'll test him at the end. So this has affected my family already. I'm just surprised.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear about that.
I am too. My condolences.
Yeah.
But it's really important, though, that in the midst of this challenge, you were able to get through to your daughter how important it is to take extra steps to take care of the people that we love. And like our first caller, you know, it's better for us to err on the side of caution. It's not going to cost us anything, in a sense, to practice a little delayed gratification in terms of connecting with people and visiting people for just purely social needs. We can use electronic media if we don't have access to electronic media, you know, for seeing people. Maybe we can settle for just low-tech calling people on the telephone.
Well, that's true. But as for my daughter, like, I haven't seen her in 2 years. And also, one of my conditions is I'm blind. So this it's it's kind of difficult. We just have to wait through the summer and see what happens, you know. And even after this finally ends, will people actually go to a basketball game or a football game or a baseball game or go to a movie? Would you go to a movie theater 2 months from now? I don't think so, you know.
I'm hesitant to go to an open-air farmer's market.
My question was, how will this end? And those are very good questions. I mean, do we, like, gradually go to a movie or a baseball game? Or what happens? Who knows?
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Hey, thank you
so
much
for
calling. And I am so, you know, I'm just thrilled that his daughter wanted him to meet her boyfriend. Hold on to that, because
yes. Well, see, and that speaks to the strength of the relationships and the connections that we form. And so those are the things that we're trying to maintain and that we want to preserve. But it's like we have to do this, what's the word I want? Not contradictory. Well, maybe it is a contradictory action and counterintuitive action to protect the things we need. We have to stay away from the people we love to show them that we love them, and we have to stay away and stay away from society at large to protect the future of connecting with society at large.
Yes. And we all have that responsibility. You know, I think in many crises, people say, well, what can I do? Or what can I do? I'm not old enough. I'm not young enough. I'm not wise enough. But, you know, because this is an equal opportunity virus that we all may be infected by, that many of us are walking around with it and may not be aware and not aware that we have it, we all have a responsibility for the love of those we love and for our society to be safe, to be careful, and to practice caution. It may be inconvenient. It may be very difficult. But except for, you know, some politicians who proffer the suggestions that old people die, we don't want to be responsible for infecting other people that we love. So for love's sake, we need to practice physical distancing and find ways to remain connected. You know, the old-fashioned way, I have a friend in a facility who unable to receive phone calls. And
yes, a mutual friend.
We've been writing letters, which was so thrilled for me to get a letter from them. So that was nice.
Yeah,
are there
ways
to maintain connection? Go ahead, Celeste.
We can. I was going to say, you know, I know people are a little leery about mail, and you know, if you are concerned, you can find some ways. I mean, they suggest you wipe it off, maybe with disinfectant wipe or a cloth, but bear in mind it is porous, and so there's only so much you can do. Maybe wear some disposable gloves. But mail is an important thing in any given time, because you can keep it and you can look at it later. And it's a physical reminder that there's a physical being attached at the other end of that communication, even though it doesn't seem like it. It's still a connection. So, okay, you know, we didn't have anybody say narc or don't narc, you know, and that's okay, but we did have people say, but build a relationship with the person so that they can hear your words and hear how you're trying to display concern and love and support for them. And maybe the answer isn't cut and dried. Maybe we will have to talk it out with each other, physical distancing.
Right.
Well, we are your community connection. It's a tagline I've been using some 30 years, and it makes even more sense now. KBOO is your community connection, and we ask you to stay connected in as many ways as you can. The calls are important. The hits on our webpage are important. But something else that's important is if you can, if you are blessed and able, support us financially so we can continue to do this. We have put together quickly a means to have remote broadcasting and production. And that's because we care about our listeners, you. So we want you to know we are here for you always through this together because, well, we're your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Thank you for listening.
Yes, indeed. This has been More Talk Radio on KBOO Portland, and we'll hear you next week.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.